Mad Pipe Madcast.
Welcome to the Mad Pipe Madcast, where we talk about marketing strategy and bring marketing insights to businesses and nonprofits. I'm Daniel DeGree, your host, and today my guest is Steve Pruneau of Free Agent Source, the management consulting company made of independent professionals. Just a bit of disclosure, Steve is a business partner of mine. I'm also a principal in Free Agent Source, so it's actually a real treat to have you on the show, Steve. And something that's been a long time in coming. I wonder if you can take a minute and just talk first a bit about what you do.
Thank you, Daniel. It's great to be here. Wow, I'm in the Mad Pipe domain. I lead clients to the future of work. I am all about what is happening at the intersection of our economy and work. What does that mean, really? I am focusing on how employment relationships are changing, but also at a practical level. So what does that mean? If employment relationships are changing, how do we actually get work done? What does that really mean in terms of people still showing up at the office and getting on with business? At a practical level, the way I earn most of my living is as a system integrator for HR, payroll, workforce management apps at the enterprise level, very large workforce. So that's people sometimes call me a project manager, a program manager, a solution architect. Those are really sort of trade skill labels, and I'm happy about that. It's very difficult as, say, a vice president of anything or an executive of anything to enjoy this kind of work. So I'm operating on two levels, at the trade level, system integration, payroll, HR, workforce, and then at the, to your point, the thought leader level, this subject area, the future of work. And there's a very lively conversation going on in our world about that.
So, Steve, you know, as you talk about what you do, you know, I mean, and you lead in talking about work, it's clear that you are passionate about work. You're a visionary about the culture of work and what work means in our society. And so that sort of brings us around to the topic of our show today, which is thought leadership. And this is going to be really applicable to a lot of the people out there that are doing digital marketing or other types of marketing, because another name for modern marketing is actually thought leadership. It is, or another way to put it is, thought leadership is the core criteria to be successful in marketing. So we're going to talk about thought leadership today. And I want to ask you first, you know, what is a thought leader? I think of a thought leader as someone who is visionary, is passionate, and is raising the bar in their industry or in the client's experience, and thereby changing the world for the better. But can you help us nail down this concept a little bit better and get a little more practical about what thought leadership is?
I can at least tell you how I see it and what it means to me. And for me, it's a person whose ideas or vision are transcending basic trade skills or mechanics or expertise in the industry. So you could take someone who's a railroad engineer, outstanding record of excellence, of service, of safety, knows the operation inside and out. You know, they're kind of hitting journeyman status, but you know, they may not have an opinion on how do we make it better, where is it going from here, what do we need to do. And I think that's the difference, we transcend into this thought leadership concept, even if we don't really want to label ourselves as that way. We transcend into that when we have some passion about what we need to do next or what needs to be fixed. We're trying to make our industry or our lives better for one reason or another. So thought leadership is really this combination of an expertise in a particular field or area of business, combined with a passionate point of view of what do we need to be doing next, what do we need to fix, what is wrong, and it's a direction then in your field. So did that make sense?
Yeah, I think to pull out of some of the things you said, you kind of zeroed in on the discomfort that people may feel in saying, I am a thought leader. And so often the way we couch it, the way we talk about it, is instead of making it a label for ourselves, we use it to talk about what we're actually doing. So with clients I work with, for instance, we'll say, you know, where is this train going? Where is your company taking the industry? Where is your company changing things up and sort of disrupting the market? And so we look for the disruptors, the things that are external to us, as sort of signs of thought leadership. They come out of somebody that says, well, things could be different than what they are now. And so therefore, there's sort of an underlying commitment to optimizing. I think that's what all thought leaders have in common, is an underlying commitment to making things better than they are. You know, why can't we have gas lighting instead of having to carry torches, you know, like we're in a black and white version of Frankenstein. And, yes. And then if we can have gas lighting, can't we just use electricity? It seems like it would be more efficient and easier, and so on. So I want to ask you if on that theme of optimizing and taking and disrupting our market and taking the train of our company down a different path, why is it important to be a thought leader at all? I mean, you know, some people who are business owners might say, well, look, I just want to make money. I'm just here to sell my services, make money. I just want to make a living so that I can, you know, have some cars, go camping, buy stuff for my kids, retire on a nice check. Does everybody really need to be a thought leader? Is it really important? And if so, why?
Well, I for sure I was in that category of, hey, you know, this is the business that I'm in. I need help finding clients. I wanted to throw that request over the wall to other people and to you to basically say, you know, I'm kind of an operations guy. I'm more comfortable with that than I am maybe in sales and marketing. Comfortable, I would say, expertise. Comfortable in both areas, but expertise-wise, I definitely needed help. And I kind of wanted to throw it over the wall and say, hey, can you bring some more business? And of course that falls flat. So, and I was, you know, later in our relationship when you were saying, but Steve, you're the thought leader. I was very uncomfortable with that. I didn't want to label myself as, oh, I'm the guy, you know, as much as we would love to consider ourselves as the next, buzz topic. There's another part of us that wants to be modest, and many of us would say, oh, I don't know if I would call myself that. But the reality is, certain ideas take hold and the crowd sort of lifts those ideas and the person along with it. So do we need to? So here's the thing about thought leadership, why it's necessary, even if you don't want to call it thought leadership. And this is primarily from the perspective of a business owner or somebody who's accountable at the highest level for the business. It could be somebody who's a product designer or somebody who's responsible for a product or business experience. But anything at that level, you have to be a thought leader because. And this is a big because. I'm pausing intentionally. Because if you can't visualize how the business works and why it attracts customers, all the people around you to help you do that can't visualize it either, or they're going to make up some approximation or some derivative that isn't anywhere close to what you need to do. So when I was looking for someone to throw the question over the wall, hey, you know, how do I grow this business? How do I just get more prosperity and find more customers? I couldn't really see it, and I was hoping somebody else would, and that's not the process at all. So long as we do that, and I think many of us do, many of us, I assume, Daniel, many of your MadPipe clients are coming to you from that perspective. I know you and I early on had a lot of disagreements because I basically, that's what I wanted. Just bring me more clients. And your response was, there's more to it than that. Yeah, I can go through the motions with you, but you've got to sort of make the connection. Sometimes I think of it like going to the gym. I can go to the gym and have a personal trainer put me through the motions, but if I don't have a vision of really why I'm training to become physically fit, if I don't have a reason or a target, it's just kind of routine. So, let me pause there because there's more. But Yes, thought leadership is necessary if you want to convey to the people who are working with you how it works, how the business works, what is the target. And so that is a little bit of a lonely exercise. But let me pause, let me give you a chance to interject.
So, you know, I like the idea that you can't just hire marketing. I think that's the knee-jerk reaction of people that want to evade this. I just want to hire somebody to get me more clients. Can you just do some SEO or some social media and bring me more clients?
Yep.
And one thing that has really changed, I tell people the reason thought leadership is so important now is the market has shifted. That now people are not, they're much less like cattle in the sense that you can just ring a bell and you'll get a herd of traffic and you'll drive traffic. We use those phrases, let's drive some traffic. Let's get some people to our website. People are smarter than that now, and we have to give them credit. You have to lead. You can't just attract. And part of the issue is there's plenty of competition, and we have access to it. It used to be that maybe you had to, you know, one of the things that leaders would hire people for is to find them things. So their assistant, you know, find me a place that does X, or find me somebody that can fix our electricity. Now all you got to do is Google it. If you can't find it, you've got your head in the sand. It's easy to find just about every service or product and gazillions of them. So instead of driving people, you can't just drive them, hire it, outsource it. As you said, if you can't visualize it, no one else will be able to visualize it either. There has to be a difference that is disruptive. There has to be a unique value proposition that's more than just we really care about our clients. And you have to do it. So part of consulting is, it's just like, as you said, a physical trainer, you know, I can't do it. I can go take you to the gym, but I can't work out for you. Somebody can't really do the fundamentally most important thing of your marketing for you. You can outsource the implementation. You cannot outsource the disruption or the thought leadership. You have to do it. You have to be the leader in regard to your marketing. And that's really a change. So I think, you know, now we see that, that thought leadership in marketing is different than subject matter expertise. It requires the involvement of the business owner. It requires the involvement of the leaders. The subject matter expert, in fact, can be other people that work in the company. Mm. They might know the most about electricity, but they're not necessarily going to be the person that says, look, there's a gazillion electricians for us to compete. This is how we're going to change our industry. So my question to you is, as a thought leader, do you find that as a thought leader and somebody that believes in thought leadership, do you find that, you know, sometimes you can have more than one thought leadership in a company that brings, that each bring different things to the table? Are they sometimes in contradiction? Do they complement one another? Is thought leadership a top-down hierarchy where there's one guy at the apex? How does it work?
No, it definitely doesn't have to be hierarchical. A lot of it depends on your personal point of view and how you like to see yourself in the business. You know, someone who likes to see them at themselves at the top of the hierarchy, yes, they may not allow much thought leadership amongst others. But no, it can, the role of thought leadership is separate from the way you organize your business. But let me, I just want to mention, it took a long time for me to get from this wish for, why can't I just start working with somebody who brings more clients, to I've got to see the business myself. That was 3 or 4 year journey for me. Now you can say, well, Steve, you're a slow learner. But yeah, for me, it took a long time to really get it. And that's why when I was with you one evening, my comment was, I'm really alone in this. And that wasn't a capitulation point of view. It means I'm accountable. It means I'm it. I can't expect somebody else to do it for me. And so what I would say on the subject of thought leadership to other business owners, other investors, people who are responsible for investors, let me take that back. I would mean, you know, active investors, founders, is that you've got to be able to see why this business makes sense. Warren Buffett actually says this a lot. He says, you know, if I don't understand why this business can make money, I don't invest in it. And that's a, you know, that's a key thing for thought leadership too, is if you can't understand why and how your business is going to work, then the people around you aren't going to understand it either. So let's talk about multiple. Let's move on then in the conversation to what you asked, which is, what about multiple thought leaders? What about this difference between subject matter experts and thought leaders? First of all, I think multiple thought leaders is nirvana when your interests overlap. And of course, that's what you and I have. You know, you and I are both coming at it from different perspectives, and we overlap, and it creates this interesting brew that we wouldn't get separately and in isolation. And I would hope other businesses are that way. I don't want to use the Apple example, but, you know, Johnny Ive is very famous for what he does. And I suspect, you know, that's an organization that has many thought leaders coming at it from different points of view, all aimed at the same target. There are probably much better examples of businesses out there where it's not just one person. You end up actually with one thought leader, you end up risking, you know, a singular sort of authoritarian point of view. Oh, what Steve said is this, so we have to do that. That's not really what we want to go for. And of course, I'm going to talk a minute about the role of subject matter experts and how we prevent that. But the ideal scenario, I think, is multiples. So to the extent that you're comfortable with other people who are passionate in your business, I think you're going to get a much more effective business and a much more exciting, cutting edge set of solutions. So that's my thought on one versus many. There's successful businesses in both ways. You know, there might be a single person. Barbara Corcoran is famous in New York for real estate. You know, she's kind of a singular thought leader on what makes real estate go and how what people's needs are, both from a buying and selling perspective.
So
go ahead.
Yes. So I notice that we talk about multiple thought leaders, and we talk about thought leaders often almost as though a leader means you're at the top of a hierarchy. But I think to pull out what you said when you said that leadership is really separate from the issue of hierarchy, you can have thought leaders at every level of the company. And in fact, yes, that's the ideal scenario. When you said, yeah, we hope that there are multiple thought leaders. Another way to put that is that the job of a thought leader, really one of the jobs, is not just to raise the bar in the industry, not just to raise the bar in the client experience and change the world, but change it internally to the company too, and reproduce themselves as thought leaders at every level. I don't mean reproduce their own thoughts or reproduce their own sort of, you know, oh, we have to all sort of toe the line and be yes men. I mean the opposite, that in the company, ideally, the goal of coaching and personal development and professional development and training is that the people in various positions in the company begin to contribute, and they begin to contribute in a visionary and a passionate way. So that, you know, a recent example, we work with MarketSmiths a lot, which is a company of copywriters. And Gene Tang, who heads MarketSmiths, is definitely a thought leader in the copywriting field. You know, you can watch your TED videos, see her at South by Southwest, sort of leading the pack in this area. But her individual writers that are on her team are sort of evolving as she leads the industry. They're evolving into leaders in their own right. They can have very effective conversations about where copy needs to go or how to achieve the mission of a given company. And so she's sort of cloning herself in a way, not necessarily her ideas, because they all bring their own flavor and they all specialize in different things. But that reproduction is really, really key. I want to also just bring out something you turned me on to, a book. It's a really ancient now business book, but it's called The E-Myth. And it brings me to a question. Do you think that the premise of The E-Myth, which I'll let you sort of elaborate, is at variance with the notion of thought leadership, that somehow that the American company, as being criticized by that book, that one of the criticisms is exactly that just because you found a company doesn't mean you're a capable thought leader?
No, I think it's slightly different. It's parallel thoughts. I think Michael Gerber would likely say, no, you have to be the visionary for your business. it's a little bit unfair to reduce down the e-myth to business process, but you know, Michael Gerber is famous for saying you've got to work on the business and not in the business, and primarily that was about systems, systematizing your business so that the business isn't depending on you as the one who knows how the business works. That is separate from thought leadership. You know, the mechanics of building a business and making it grow. I'm talking about infrastructure, processes, departments. That is a different part of the business. So I would say they're not incompatible. And there are sections of his advice that do focus on what I think could be called thought leadership. Let's talk about the subject matter expert question and scalability. So, as another topic. So we were talking about you were saying hierarchy and leaders. Eventually, the ideal scenario is to have multiple people contributing who have similar or at least some overlapping interests and passions. That's the ideal. Your business cannot scale if you're the only thought leader. Now, people who are somewhat insecure about being usurped or I don't know if I like it that this other person is getting all the attention, then you just simply won't scale as well. You won't get as big or grow as fast. Where when you have a business that's in alignment, that has a lot of people that are excited by that business and they're all contributing, that's when the thing is really healthy and growing. So that's where this idea of multiple thought leaders comes in. But in the end, the one who is either the business owner or in a position of leadership near the top of the hierarchy, those are the key thought leaders for sure. It is just the nature of humans to organize themselves around, as Seth Godin would say, in tribes, around someone who attracts them for some reason. So let's talk about subject matter experts versus thought leaders. And this kind of goes back to the mechanics of marketing and sales and where it all starts. So in the beginning, when we have this conversation of, oh, I would like to grow my business, or, oh, this is how the business works, how can we now get the word out? You as a thought leader might not even have the complete idea. You might, have hit a brick wall and say, this is as far as I can take it. But you at least need to be able to describe the business outcome that you're going for, or the life, or the way the business, the business that you envision. At that point, your marketing consultant, your advisor, your business partner, can approach it, and you start this conversation from that conversation point. You start with trying to solve the problem, and so now I'm describing, well, what would a subject matter expert be? A subject matter expert is someone who has technical expertise in their field, and they're going to be able to advise you on how to go about this thing. They may or may not be a thought leader, and so I'm speaking generically now. You may approach a consulting role, or I may, in my field, approach it from a point of view of subject matter expertise. The other person may have the business vision. They may have the perspective of thought leadership, and I'm just providing the best practices. Well, this is generally what we do. This is the shortest way to get where you want to go. I may or may not be performing the role of thought leadership. But the point I want to make is that conversation can help you get to the finished product of this is how the business really works. I'm not saying you have to have alone in a dark room figured out the whole business top to bottom. But you at least need to have enough vision to drive your conversation with subject matter experts, to have that debate, to arm wrestle with them. No, this is really how it needs to be. Now, it may be that the subject matter expert convinces you otherwise, like, oh, I've made a mistake. This happened with you and me, Daniel, on Free Agent Source. We would go down this path of assumptions and finally hit the end and say, oh, that's not so good. And then we back up and say, oh, well, given these original interests in the business, maybe we have to redirect, or as Eric Ries would say, pivot. How's that with, did that make sense about the relationship between subject matter expert and thought leadership and how one can be the other?
Yeah, it's a collaborative relationship, and one where, you know, you can't just exist alone in a vacuum. There's no such thing as thought leadership without other people sort of contributing. You know, I like what you said about thought leaders organize themselves around tribes. So I have this question. Does this notion of thought leadership conflict at some intrinsic level with the sort of management culture or the culture of middle management or the culture of leadership in general that we've developed over the past few decades?
Yes and no. Yes, it does conflict in a more traditional top-down corporate hierarchy. Those organizations do have thought leadership, many of them, and those are the ones that tend to run better. If you know, it's discussed, it's been discussed for decades and in thousands of books, I suspect, that, you know, what is your vision? That's where this vision statement comes from. A vision, the traditional management vision statement, is sort of a really boiled down concept related to thought leadership. And so the less vision, the less visionary business leaders are, the less everybody else who's delivering the business, who's performing in an execution role, the less they're able to really know what's the target. Businesses that have more visionary leaders, Intel is famous for this, then tend to have, you know, a more focused organization, tend to be more directed. eBay under Meg Whitman was considered to be, you know, in that positive category, where a business that's kind of floundering, maybe Motorola in the later days, you know, they were not having much thought leadership, but so those are kind of the old examples, the traditional old school examples. So yes, you can have thought leadership, but it's typically coming from the top. Potential very capable thought leaders in the management ranks tend to not get heard because of the rigid structure of a traditional organization. Now, what's shifting is in the world of social, you know, where conversations are flying around Twitter and LinkedIn and everything else, is there is less hierarchy or almost no formal hierarchy. It's really all about thought leadership, people's clout, you know, in the conversation is really based on, did they say something that resonated with the audience? And, you know, does everybody generally agree? Yeah, this guy's got something to say. I'm really interested. Again, Eric Ries in the Lean Startup, Simon Sinek from a perspective of leadership, Seth Godin, of course, long time on thought leader on these ideas in marketing. So what I'm trying to say is, In the world of social and collaboration, thought leadership is now firing on all cylinders. It doesn't matter where you are in the hierarchy. In those businesses, I'm really excited about this because this is a big conversation going on around people who are in the future of work. Not everybody calls it that. A lot of people are just instinctively saying, wow, this is faster, this is freer, ideas are flowing, we're finding more, better, faster. And it's because they're not having those boundaries of a traditional corporate organization. But what's happening is we're starting to draw and see a contrast between a formal corporate organization and people who are just getting together and collaborating, whether it's in a startup business or whether it's multiple businesses collaborating together. The boundaries of what is a company are really starting to blur. And that's because of this concept of collaboration, creativity, innovation. And it's in those environments that we have multiple thought leaders. And that's the sort of unpredictable brew, and I mean exciting brew. We don't know what we're going to get out of this when we start throwing multiple people into a pot with their ideas swirling around. I suspect we're going to get some pretty interesting things. Certainly more innovative, certainly more valuable than anything the world has seen before. That's my perspective. But so, yeah, I think they're, on the one hand, thought leadership is still needed in a traditional organization. It's just that it's often not allowed until you get near the top. In a more flat organization where there isn't as much of a formal business hierarchy, organizational hierarchy, there's room for thought leaders everywhere, and the business tends to go very fast. Zappos, of course, is trying to accomplish this. They're the most famous. And Tony Hsieh is very deliberate about trying to achieve that within a business structure, but without a hierarchy.
Yeah, I think you're underscoring the fact that, you know, to be a thought leader, you have to have something to say. You have to have the vision and something to say. And so many vision statements, you mentioned those, are full of jargon, not vision. They're the opportunity for thought leadership, but maybe they don't pan out that way. They read like a lot of corporate marketing, you know, from traditional management consulting firms. You know, you think they're saying something, and then you get far enough along, you're waiting for it, and it turns out that there's nothing really being said. And you compare that to like a Jerry Maguire, you know, the guy who writes an actual mission statement and gets fired the next week, you know, for doing it.
Yes.
I love this notion that now it is the norm. And I feel like we're almost at the birth of modern science. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, the Cold War really put the kibosh on this to a certain degree, but, you know, and we were in Vietnam, et cetera. But the notion that scientists were getting together in the 1950s and 60s, before anybody else really had this sort of international communication on a par that we have now outside of an ambassadorial role, scientists were getting together and exchanging data. In fact, that's how we got the internet. You know, they were creating ways to exchange research information and collaborate on experiments. And then we, you know, ham radio guys were doing it, you know, Trekkies were doing it. There was this culture of, hey, let's just have a conversation outside the traditional normal boundaries of society or hierarchy. And now it's small entrepreneurs and people starting up, people with startups and people with small businesses that are having this sort of open conversation, as you say, and making it available to the rest of us and becoming leaders by having meaningful things to say. So I want to ask you, you've named a lot of different people that are sort of doing it right, and maybe you have some others that you think are good examples of thought leadership. Can you kind of pull out some of those and tell us what makes them a thought leader? Why is it may be hard for us to look and say, well, I know this guy, the leader of Zappos, is a thought leader, but why is he a thought leader? He's a thought leader because he does what? What's the behavior? And I want to ask sort of a follow-up question, which is, how does thought leadership like that impact the market we're in and the new economy? Is it having an impact in the sense that the economy or the market itself is shifting because of this shift in accessibility of the conversation and thought leadership?
Let me start with a really narrow example is in project methodology and Agile and Scrum. So there's in the early days of Scrum, and I don't expect the audience to know what this means, but it's just a particular framework of Agile principles. And there's a guy named Mike Cohn who really became the thought leader. He's the resident expert and has been for years. You know, I don't know what drove him. He must have been passionate about it, certainly understood it. I think it's a combination of this understanding, experience, and passion that he wanted to get it out there. You know, he still writes the books and the blogs that are go-to for Scrum. Now, we're starting to move beyond Scrum to some other concepts, but you know, he's an example of a go-to guy, and most industries, most fields have this. I suspect every area of medicine has you know, the go-to person who is both technically proficient and passionate about it. I've mentioned a few times Eric Ries. He's old hat by now. Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great many years ago, you know, immediately established himself as the thought leader on those areas, on that subject of leadership and business excellence. But I want to say something. I want to shift just for a minute about this need to do it as a business owner or a business leader. You talked about sort of hollow vision statements. So let's start with vision statements and then talk about social media. You know, everybody, most people get, if you're in business and you're in a traditional company, you know, if you've gone to business school, you know you're supposed to have a vision statement because it helps people, helps your entire organization focus on the target. And so you as a business generally write one or update it when you are now appointed to this cool new executive position. But so that's how we get a vision statement. But the problem is, if you don't see what makes the business go, you know, if you're not the head of Costco where you can see top to bottom why people love Costco, you know, it's going to be a hollow vision statement, and that's the problem. So when you're telling someone, one of your clients, Steve, you need to get out there and with your message, I'm like, yeah, I get it intellectually that I need to be doing this, but I don't know what the hell to say. And so for years, I was quiet on LinkedIn and Twitter. Yeah, I know, Steve, you need to be writing a blog. But what am I going to say? It's so damn hard to write this blog. And, you know, it's like going to the gym just to work out when you don't really know why you're working out. And that's hard, and it generally doesn't happen, just like you generally stop going to the gym. But when you've got a reason for it, and this is what changed for me, this is what made writing blogs easily, even though my blog output, you know, isn't quite what a lot of people think ought to be. Nevertheless, when I do decide to write something, it's easier because I know what I want to say. I know why I'm saying it. I know who I'm trying to talk to. And that's the thing with the vision statement as well in a traditional business, is if you're just doing it because you ought to do it, if you're just tweeting because you ought to tweet, if you're just writing a blog post because you ought to, those aren't going to get a lot of resonance. They're not going to resonate with the audience. But if you've got a reason for doing it, that's a big deal. I'll insert adjective in front of big. So that's the big shift, whether it's a vision statement in a traditional business or whether it's your thought leadership in the new world. It's why are you doing it and what are you trying to accomplish? And of course, until you get that, don't bother. You know, try, go and do the exercise, get into the habit of going to the gym. I shouldn't say don't bother at all. I'm sure you would criticize that, but get into the habit. But at some point, you're going to have to figure out what you're trying to do and why you're doing it.
So I want to sort of ask you how that impacts the market and the new economy. Let me let you take that topic as well.
So people are more freely and more rapidly associating themselves with things that they love, whether it's consumer products or business organizations. Pinterest is an example for a little while, and maybe, I don't know if Instagram, but basically what we're saying is, I like this. I like what they're doing. I like what they're doing. And I want to fill my life with all these things that I like. And it's a way to sort of organize, things around you and shape your life experience, whether it's from a personal level or from a business level. And so what's happening when we say we like that, we're responding to someone that's just not by accident. Just about every one of those things that we like, the person on the other end of the like is intentionally trying to say, hey, I really want to create this for our world and for you. Do you like this? And so we've got this, it's like a personal relationship. I like what you have to say, or I really like what you're about. oh yeah, I like what you're about too. And so this accessibility, we're in a highly communicative world now, much more so than before. We're not dependent on print newspapers to get our information. We're getting it in much higher volume and much at a much faster pace. So what it allows us to do is separate out much, much faster. Oh, I like this. I have more options now. I want that. And so we're, the thought leadership is not only creating this, but also thought leaders themselves are getting selected and rising to the top based on what they're bringing to their field that happens to be desirable by the audience. So yeah, I think accessibility is really opening up, and it creates a richer environment for everyone.
So it's like a snowball effect, you know, there's less commoditization, more accessibility, and that drives less commoditization and drives more accessibility as thought leadership sort of becomes the engine for that. I want to ask you one last thing to kind of wind down the show, and that is simply more of an open question. What else is on your mind about thought leadership, or in the absence of that, what are you personally passionate about that you really are trying to? It's not that we set out, I want to be a thought leader. Saying that means, you know, you still don't know, you don't have anything that to lead with, but you become a thought leader when you know what you're passionate about and what you want to change or what problem you want to solve. That's when you are capable of being a thought leader. So what are you passionate about? What do you want to change? What problem do you want to solve? And what else do you want to say about thought leadership in general?
So first of all, about thought leadership in general, you know, I think it's okay if you don't have that vision for your business right now, which basically means maybe you have a trade. Maybe you have a local business or a, say, regional business that performs some basic function. It could be an auto mechanic shop or several shops. And there could be just some very fundamental reasons, you know, hey, we treat customers right. We publish our prices and we're fair. You know, that is a practical approach. And if your business is successful, then that's okay. Or maybe you, like some of my peers, if you're a certain type of consultant in a certain industry, but you're not getting your own sales. You're someone else is finding your clients for you. That's fine. Just know that other person is the person who has the vision for what really closes the sale. And just if you don't have it yourself, you're going to have to align yourself with someone who does see it. And there are many, many partnerships like that. That's why we have symbiotic relationships. This person tends to bring me all my leads, or I'm an affiliate of this larger company. And that franchising is all about that. Franchising is 100% about, you know what, I'm not bringing any thought leadership about what makes this business go. The head company does that. I just execute, and I own this part of the business. There's nothing wrong with that. Just know that your business won't grow by itself, that if you're not doing it, then somebody else should. So I'm basically giving everyone permission of, while you may want to move your advance your business, if you're having a hard time with that vision, then just realize that you're gonna have to work with somebody else. On the other hand, if you do want to take it to the next level, that's where you come in, Daniel, and you say yes, but you have to be the thought leader then. If you're committed to changing your business, taking it to the next level, you got to give us that vision. So that's the one thing. Now, what am I interested in from a thought leadership perspective? A little bit more on that. I'm interested in the fact that we're really at the threshold of massive changes in working relationships. I actually sometimes wonder if our society in America is really ready for the changes that are coming. I think not. And that's part of why I'm interested in the future of work, is because we have these traditional corporate infrastructures and we have these traditional ways of thinking about work. Generally, you know, we have to employ people on a permanent full-time basis or not at all. We're still not looking at anything in between. And it's like water draining out from around a dock, and we've just now got dry ground, and it's completely left. And I think organizations are going to wake up and say, oh my God, what has happened to us? Why is it this way? How do we cope? And suddenly this sort of natural evolution of the way we work is happening completely outside of the corporate environment. So I'm very excited about that, because almost certainly the value produced by new organizations and different ways of working is going to far outpace anything a traditional corporation can do. And secondly, I want to help people get there, because whether Steve says it or not, it's coming. It's like a tsunami coming. The earthquake happened. We know that. And so I know you may not want to believe it, that a tsunami is coming to our village. Whether I stand up on the mountaintop and say it's coming or not, it's still going to come. So I basically want to say it's survivable. We can get through this. And I'm trying to think of actually a better example, because a tsunami is a destructive thing. And what I'm really excited about is it's sort of destructive, but it's actually very creative. We're about to create an enormous amount of wealth, satisfaction, and greater productivity.
Well, you know, there are some classical philosophers and political philosophers that would say you have to destroy in order to create. There has to be some clearing of the ground, some whitewashing of your canvas before you can actually have a painting. So I think any of the metaphors are appropriate that are metaphors of transformation. So if those of you that are interested in that kind of transformation and for your company, and you would like to host a project or get a project done more effectively, definitely visit the company that Steve is here to represent, freeagentsource.com. So I just want to comment and say that, yeah, you know, I think your point is really apropos about those who are sort of agents for a larger brokerage, or whose own company does sort of the marketing for them. If the company's doing the thought leadership, that works great, until you're sort of competing with other agents or your company is not really doing enough. And then if you want to grow outside that box, the common question is, how do I do it? And the most responsible answer is, then you need to become a thought leader in your company, even your company is sort of trying to lead for you, you've got to step outside that box. So it's very common with mortgage brokers, real estate agents, promotional product specialists, other people that work for larger companies. So yeah, we see that a lot. Well, Steve, it's been great having you. You've been listening to the Mad Pipe Marketing Madcast, where we talk about marketing strategy and bring marketing insights to businesses and nonprofits. To get more episodes like this, visit madpipe.com/podcast or find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Steve, thanks very much for being on the show. It's been fantastic to finally have you here.
I loved it. Thanks so much, Daniel.
The Mad Pipe Madcast.